Today is April 4th. My name is Michael Rodriguez from Michigan State University Libraries, and I'm here to interview Anne Marie Ooman for the Michigan Writers Series. Did I say your name right?
Actually, it's pronounced like the word. It's pronounced Ooman.
Ooman.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, I know. It's counterintuitive. That's okay.
Well, it's two O's, so.
I know. It goes against all.
We have a standard set of questions, and we can take these in any direction that you please. I always ask about Michigan, since it's the Michigan Writers Series. We
right.
ask about Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have the subject matter of all your work that I've seen anyway is Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
So to ask you how does Michigan, have influence is a little bit ridiculous. But maybe to start with the inverse, have you lived anywhere else?
I've lived in Chicago and in England and in a variety of places, but Michigan is home. I'm always mm-hmm. drawn back here, flies to honey. And it's really important to me to be here. It's surrounded by water, which seems to be something I need. Mm-hmm. And, of course, family is here, mm-hmm. and that's another big deal.
Did you find yourself in those? Have you always been a creative writer?
No, I was a public school teacher for many years, and a waitress and a bartender and all those things that you do to get by when you need to.
Did you do creative writing during those?
I've always been a scribbler.
Yeah.
I was the kind of person who liked to keep diaries when I was a child and little journals and things like that. I didn't start writing seriously until my 30s when my first marriage ended, and I did some, that sort of typical assessment of self and said, what do I really want to do here? And I wanted it, the language thing was always there. So then I really started pursuing it.
Did you do what has become a fairly typical thing, which is to go to school for
a master's
degree?
Not right away. Yeah. I started writing seriously in my early 30s, and I didn't do my master's until I was 40.
Yeah.
And at first I didn't think I didn't have enough confidence. I mean, I really just didn't think I had the chops to even get near an MFA program.
Mm.
And it took me a while of taking smaller courses, being part of writers groups, hanging out with writers and talking to them,
enjoying lots of rejection from publications.
And then you get a few chops and you start to think, okay, I think maybe I could do it.
Were you living in Michigan
mm-hmm.
when this?
I've gone back and forth between Michigan and Illinois, in Chicago specifically, a couple of different times in a couple of different lives, but mostly it's been here.
Well, the proximity of Chicago makes it easy to go back and forth.
We
should still talk about Michigan. So, obviously, Michigan is an important landscape for you.
Mm-hmm.
And landscape is an important part of your writing. So, I don't know. It's just is that just the subject is just natural, and that's why, the books are memoir, or at least the mm-hmm. Pulling Down the Barn The House of Fields. But then that's another question, I suppose, altogether, memoir versus nonfiction, or memoir versus fiction. I suppose when you write memoir, you have to write about your childhood, mm-hmm. your past.
Mm-hmm.
But what is it about, Michigan itself, I suppose? That's a dumb question.
Well, it's home.
Yeah.
And I think we always have to grapple with whatever home is for all of us. And of course, it's been said lots of times, home is different things to different people, but it's my home, and so I have to come back. That's the bedrock, figuratively and literally, and it is the emotional landscape as well as the physical landscape. And that when you can start to get those metaphors to work together, Michigan as place of water, place of land, place of air, and then also those emotional levels, when all that starts to work together metaphorically, then it's really good grist for a writer.
Maybe a better question is, have you written about any place other than Michigan?
And my next book is, it's called Temporarily Finding My America, which is a little pretentious, but it's working for now. And it's about my travels, because even though I use Michigan as a home base, I love to travel. It's that going away and coming back, that moving back and forth between different ends of the spectrum. So this collection of essays involves places all over the United States and Puerto Rico, and but I stayed in the United States territories. So there's an essay on Mount Rainier. There's an essay, Bisbee, Arizona. There's a New York City essay. There's a Miami essay. There's a an essay on Missouri. So it's places that I've traveled, and my husband has a real gift for getting off the beaten track, and so we've had some really true adventures in ways that I think most of the tourist situation doesn't usually evoke. And so I've been really fortunate that way and had lots of material. And it's been really an interesting thing because I'm working with trying to get what that means to stretch that elastic outward and then spring back and to go out to these other places and get pulled back again. Because I love being in different places, but I have to come home.
We had someone last night in the library who was an Arab American, Khaled Atawa, who's a faculty member at University of Michigan, and he talked extensively about being in exile, living in Michigan, living in the States, when he's from, you know, the Middle East. And I think that's interesting. He didn't talk about, he talked about exiles, not expatriates, or being, you know, somebody traveling. So he's always writing about home, living somewhere
living
else.
Away from it, yeah. And I'm writing about
home. Well,
I'm writing about other places, but living home.
Right.
I think I would agree with him. If I was forced or in a situation where I couldn't live in Michigan, I would feel in exile as well. I think there's something about rootedness in, you know, maybe it's Midwest, but I hate to be, you know, culturally stereotyping myself, but it might just be those kinds of attitudes that we grow up with that makes us have that sensibility about home. I'm not afraid to leave it, but
But you keep coming back.
I keep coming back, right.
Let's talk about genre for a second. Do you consider what you do essay or memoir? And what's the difference?
Well, I don't know that there is a significant difference. Essay, of course, can be academic and scholarly, and it can encompass a larger and probably a more formal sensibility. But we often call pieces of memoir or personal essays essay because it in many ways will involve other kinds of reading. It'll have a literary tradition, or allusions that the writer is exploring, and so it gets bigger than just a memory, and even bigger than just a reflective memory. It begins to draw on other things, and the new essays that I'm writing particularly do that.
I'm interested in hearing about people, writers, creative writers, who approach publishers with essays, with books of essays or memoir. This has become a very popular thing, it seems, anyway.
It's not too long ago. Right, it's had a nice renaissance, that's true.
To what do you regard this trend? I shouldn't call it a trend. To what do you regard the resurgence or its popularity?
Well, I'm of two minds about it, because on one hand, I think we are a more voyeuristic society, and so we tend to be more interested in what's happening That's the sort of dark, gossipy side. We want to know what's happening with other people. But the better side, or the other way of looking at it, is that we are aware of our, I think, really identifying with and learning from and thinking more deeply about humanity by reading what other people have grappled with. So one doesn't discount the other. They might be impulses sitting side by side, but I think one is an empathetic and compassionate impulse, and the other is a kind of what's going on over there impulse.
Understandable. And I find it interesting that this is what's being taught in freshman writing classes, expository writing classes,
right,
on models and how to do expository writing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And people are reading, there are trends about culture and so forth. But the personal essay is one of the first things that you're taught in college composition.
And that's in part because that it assumes that the writer has an experience, has something to say, and is living their life, and that's worthy of consideration. I think the danger is assuming that that's all there is, and not putting those kinds of memories and experiences through an editorial process.
Right.
I think that's really key to have an awareness of how one discovers what one really means. Mm-hmm. And to know that that's a discovery process. That's not there the first time you put pen to paper, or at least very rarely.
And the writing itself is a discovery process.
Yes, yes.
I'm also curious about that you've written drama and had it performed.
Mm-hmm.
Is this, how much of this has to do with being at Interlaken? Were you at Interlaken when you wrote for the stage?
No. I was writing for the stage before that. Mm. My MFA manuscript was, actually, part of my MFA manuscript was a verse play. And I've always had this side interest in theater and drama. I'm always thrilled when I see somebody's adapting something for the stage. I think that brings a three-dimensional quality to it that we don't get in very many other genres. And so I'm excited about theater too. And I'm a restless writer, and it's too confining for me to say I'm a poet or a memoirist or a dramatist. I've had my most success as a memoirist, but I really love writing plays and writing for the stage, and always kind of have that eye going too.
So where have the plays been produced? I know a few of them.
Oh, mostly just regionally. Northern Bells, which is the first one, which is based on oral histories of women in northern Michigan. That's had the best run. That had a reading in Chicago and St. Louis. It had a production. It's had a production here. It's had a nice number of productions here and there. Wives of an American King, which is a play based on the James Jesse Strang story, that was done at in Traverse City with a grant, and also on Beaver Island, which was just a trip. It was just amazing to watch people grapple with what I had done with that story.
How many people live on Beaver Island?
About 600, 600 or 700.
So there was, of those people that produced the play, it was people that lived on Beaver Island?
There are no direct descendants of the James, of the Mormon.
Right, but the people that put on the play, did you bring them over from the mainland, or were they Beaver Island residents?
No, it was done by a small semi-professional company. It was the Emerald Isle company. That's not right, but it was a small company on Beaver Island that did it.
How did the Beaver Island audience regard
it was very evocative. They really wanted to talk about it, and it, you know, they're interested in it, and they're also afraid of it, and they have certain perceptions of what those people were doing and who they were. Mm-hmm. And some of them, some people on Beaver Island are very open to talking about that, and mm-hmm. and some are not, you know, and you can understand that. Mm-hmm. It's controversial material.
I could talk about this for a while, so I'll just ask the last question, which is always about teaching. You have, most of the people that come in here are university teachers. That's mm-hmm. just the nature of who we get. They're easy to find.
Sure, sure.
But you teach at a different place, uh-huh. you know, a different kind of place. Mm-hmm. And the question is, the easy question is, how does teaching influence or affect your life as a professional writer, aside from giving you a job? But this is a different place, and I wonder, you know, what it is like to be a professional writer and work at a place like Interlaken.
It's pretty marvelous. I feel very blessed. Yeah. I really do. I feel really lucky.
How many students are there during the year?
The academic year is about 450 students, and they are. We sometimes refer to Interlaken as a small college with a curfew, because they are almost all of them are minors. They're secondary mm-hmm. students. But they are self-selected. Most of them self-selected artists in music, dance, theater, visual arts, motion picture arts, or creative writing, and they also finish a pretty rigorous academic program. Mm-hmm. But for me, as a writer, it's always an incredible tension, because I get such a kick out of them. And they are so dedicated and excited and eager to learn. So of course, as a teacher, you respond to that. I mean, that's the stuff of great teaching. You know you can do something. Yeah, just you know you can do something, and they are so responsive. And there's also that synergy, great energy that they give to me, and I work back. But it also means that I don't get to do as much writing as I would like to. Mm. All of the writing instructors there are professional writers, but we all struggle with this. You know, I think the same muse that feeds teaching feeds some of the writing, and it's very hard to go home and say, I'm going to write for 2 or 3 hours after a day of giving a lot.
Yeah.
So it's that quandary.
Do you teach all year round? I mean, they have the summer program, and mm-hmm. they have the, mm-hmm. you know.
Many of the instructors there do teach all year, but I do not.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you teach, you don't teach the summer program?
No, I have somehow managed to.
Wow. Well, you're an administrator too, though.
Yes, right. Yes. Yeah,
that's
so,
how you
thank you. Yeah.
Well, we should probably go. We're already late. So,
all right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. It's been a real pleasure.